Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coach Unplugged is brought to you by great people over at teachhoops.com. For coaches who want to get better. From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. Here is your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged, brought to you by the great people over at teachhoops.com. For coaches who want to get better, a vast plethora, I've always wanted to use plethora, of practice plans, videos, one-on-one calls, office hours, you name it, we got it. So go over and check it out. 14-day free trial. Please share. If you know of any coaches that want to be part of this, let them know. You know, we would love for them to be able to listen to this podcast to more people. That's one of the reasons we started this, was to get out to more people. And obviously one of the joys for me is to be able to talk to coaches like Rick. You know, when you can talk to somebody who invented an offense, it's pretty exciting. So we're starting part two of Basketball Coach Unplugged with Rick Torbert. Pretty special. I think you'll find a lot of great information. If you have any questions, please let me know. And here's Rick. And that might go into the second thing. How do I promote variety in decision-making? Because my guys seem to do the same thing every time. They'll pass, they'll go screen. I mean, they tend to do the same thing every time. How do you get them to not be like robots, not running the flex offense?
Right, right. Well, and that's what you're trying to overcome, right?
Right, right.
For your listeners who are not as familiar as you and I are,
right.
There are two decision makers. There's more than that at one time, but two primary decision makers. One, by the way, when I explain this, this explains the difference between the read and react and a pure motion offense. Even though read and react, you get all the benefits of motion. You know, you create an athletic ball.
Yeah.
You move players. You got spacing, and boom, good things happen. You break the defense down, and you train. This boils down to training players how to take advantage of breakdowns on defense. But the difference is, in redirect, the ball handler is the decision maker. Everyone else, as you know, must hold their spots, watch you, see what you do, and then they react with the one thing that we've all drilled them to do based on what's being done with the ball. If you drive right, they do something. If you drive left, they do something. If you blah, 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 okay? And that way you don't have five chiefs out there, right?
Right.
You got one chief. Yep. And then, so that's one I want to discuss with you. The other one is, if a player gives up the ball, if they pass anywhere,
an easy one would be somebody brings the ball up and they pass it to the wing.
Yep.
Right.
And
okay.
They cut, right?
Yep.
And read and react, again, the difference between a motion offense and read and react is that player must cut to the basket.
Right.
Okay. Not just cut anywhere, but to the basket, because we're going They are our first scoring option, okay? We're going to put pressure on the rim. But the moment that player's feet hit the lane, we allow them to become an independent decision maker. That's when we give them decisions back. Right. At the point of the pass, no, they've got to cut.
Right.
But as soon as their feet hit the lane, if they've not gotten the ball, they can do a number of things. You name it, and of course we've got a layer for it.
We do.
But really, it's just all of the things that you could do in basketball without the ball if you were in the lane.
Right.
Yeah. I could post up. I could screen for another post player and then get myself open. I could go back screen anybody on the perimeter. I could set a pin screen. I could use a pin screen. I could set or use a brush screen if another cutter's coming. I mean, this just goes on and on and on and on, right?
Right.
And now, so back to your – so for the listeners listening, there's one decision maker with the ball that trumps everybody. But there's at least one other decision maker making decisions that could affect the next action. And it's that player who is either stopped and posted up in the lane or is cutting through the lane.
Right.
Okay. So now to your question, Steve. Right. Decision making. Okay. So first we got to talk about which one we're talking about, ball handler or the one cutting through the lane.
Well, I think after they get rid of the ball, they tend to do the same. They cut, but then they tend to do the same thing. They'll either screen away or they'll they get very, when I've charted it, they get very robotic. And you know, the kid that posts up is the kid that posts up. He's not the kid that sets the back screen, or he's not the kid that brushes. I mean, how do you break them of that habit?
Okay. Great, great question. Great coaching question too. But I'm going to give you an analogy from jiu-jitsu. You know, it's a wrestling type of submission sport that my instructor would teach one particular move, okay?
Yep.
And, of course, there's a counter move to that your opponent's got to do, right?
Right.
So you teach it, and then you set up the drill, and you do it, right? Well, immediately your mind goes to what ifs. Well, can I do this too? And then, but what if he does this? Can I do this? Very well, the instructor would never let us go on. Okay.
Okay.
Now there's a few really gifted people.
LeBron James is one of them. Yes. Yes.
That could go. Oh yeah, I can see all of the options here and choose the correct one based on my opponent. But for the rest of us mere mortals, my instructor would say, no, I want you to do this one, this particular move, or this particular counter to that move over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And then once we could do it without thinking, then he went to the next one and said, okay, here's your next one, because that one's going to get stopped. Okay. So here's your next one, and I want you to stay here and drill and drill and drill and drill. And, of course, I resisted and stuff, but over time, all of the options became habit, you know, based on how my opponent is playing me. Right? Well, analogously, I think you must give, and you could give all the cutters the same one, or you could customize it. Joe, when your feet hit the lane, I always want you to do blank. Okay.
Ooh, I like that. Like I have a kid. Like every time you go in, you should post up. No, every time you go in, you should look for a layup or screen away. Okay, I like that. I like that.
Bill, since you are the best 3-point shooter, I always want you hitting the lane and then back screening someone one pass away from the ball.
Right, because then you're ready for your three.
Yeah, you're going to shape up to shoot, right?
Right.
It doesn't take Bill long to learn that one.
Yeah.
He's a shooter.
There has to be a benefit, though, sometimes, too. I have to show them that. It's like, if you set this screen, then you are going to be open, too. It's the, you know, egocentric kind of.
What you just said might be the most important part of teaching the reader act.
Right.
I'm lying. What you just said may be the most important is, how do you sell it?
Right.
You got to sell it to the kids like, like, look, hey, here's why you're not doing Bill's decision, Joe, because this is how we're going to take advantage of your strengths right now and hide your weaknesses. This, you're going to help our team by blank. You know?
Right.
Now, later on, Joe, we're going to add to this.
Right.
We're going to start developing. But for right now, I don't want you making, you know, six different decisions in there.
Right.
You know, I want you to always set a pin screen. I want you to always stop and post up in the short corner. You name it, right?
Right.
Now, once they get good at that, now I'm talking about the individuals.
Right.
Once they get that, then based on their strength and weaknesses, you go on and you add another one. But right. Hey, let me give you a great example of this, okay?
Okay.
This was about 4 or 5 years ago, Delphi University, Division II up in New York, I think.
Yep.
They had a point guard come in. Her name was Ando Tron. I think she's coaching now, or she might still be playing over in Europe. She came in. Hey, Steve, this is the consummate point guard you want. Listen, right. I mean, she'd already watched, studied, knew the language of the entire read and react before stepping on the floor at Adelphi.
Right.
I mean, this is the coach's dream.
Right.
Okay. She's coaching the other girls. Right. Telling them what reactions they should be. I mean, it's like having a coach on the floor, okay?
Right.
She's their best three-point shooter, and she can get to the rim. Now, she's the smallest player on the floor, but she can get to the rim. She's fast. She's a good ball handler, goes right or left, best three-point shooter. All right. The first 4 or 5 games was disastrous for her. So the coach called me and said, hey, could you do like a Skype with her, a little one-on-one, and just find out what's going on in her brain, you know? So I did, and I asked her, and she, because I'd watched the games, and I said, well, what seems to be your problem? And she said, look, when I hit the lane, and she started going through all the different things that she could do, and she was ticked that her teammates were not responding to this.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Each one of these, you know? Yeah. Yeah, I said, my post is at the high post, coach, so when I cut to the basket, if I don't get it, then I turn and I make the Utah screen, and then right. I'm looking to shape up. I mean, she's going into stuff like that, right?
Right.
And her center doesn't know what the Utah screen. You know what I mean?
Yes, it's simplifying the layers, yes.
Yes, so she was just paralyzed by all the things and why aren't they – and I said, okay. And listen, I'd love to tell you that I'm just was brilliant here, but this was a shot in the dark, and it worked. And I said, hey, let's try this, and then we'll get back together later. And I said, let's simplify things. I said, you're the smallest on the floor, right? She said, yeah. I said, well, I'll tell you what. When you hit the lane, I only want you to do one of two things, one of two, just two decisions. On the first one, go set a screen for your post wherever she's at. Now, they played their post everywhere.
Right.
High post, four corner, mid post, weak side, strong. I said, because they will not want to switch that, right?
Right. Yep.
Big little with you, yeah. They will not,
they not want to switch that.
And I didn't have to tell her to play off of that. You know, after she sets the screen, she's going to take her next best action is going to be good, okay? And then I said, now, you're also the best three-point shooter, right? And she said, yes. You know, I mean,
right.
She, yeah,
she
yes, I am. And I said, then you, if you don't set a screen for your post, then go set a back screen for one of your teammates that are one spot away from the ball and shape up for the three. Okay. Steve, I never had to call back. We never had another call. That totally.
Because it's simplified.
Yes. And now she was decisive and aggressive right. and intentional with yep. her actions in yep. there. Yeah, she went on to do some others, but just getting her started down a simple for her two decisions. Well, I think you can do that. I know you can do that with every one of your players. Give them one, start with one.
Right.
And by the way, someone watching your team.
They won't know.
No, they won't. Only you know what their decision is when they hit the lane, you know?
Right, right. And then you build on it. Then you build on the layers because then it's like, okay, your season starts in November and ends in March. By December, you're maybe adding a second move and then – because they're, and then you give them a two or three weeks doing that, and then you add another one. It's perfect teaching things. I agree. I never had thought about that though.
And some kids, you can their cup's bigger than others,
yes.
So you can put more in it.
Right.
This is why I can't put that. I'm just not good enough to put that on DVD. You know.
Right. Right.
You follow me?
Yeah, I teach. I'm a math teacher. Like you're a math teacher. I saw. And anyway, it's like I tell them the first day or first week of school. I say John here might spend 5 minutes on the homework, and Susie might spend 43 minutes on the homework. You can all do it.
If
some of you have strengths in some classes and others, and you know that's where building on. I think that's perfect. All right, what would your ideal shot chart look for? Like for the read and react. If I gave you a shot chart, what would it look like?
All inside the restricted art.
You think so? Could that happen?
Well, no, it can't. Of course, it can't. But I'm basing that on the shot charts. If you look them up, you know, online and stuff, you look at the numbers. The highest, the most points per shot you'll get are shots that are inside the restricted area.
Yep.
Because they also lead to free throws.
Yep.
Okay, so it's not just the two that you're getting. You're getting five there as well. The next highest is the corner three-point shot.
I know, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? So counterintuitive. I know.
The stats teacher in me just thinks that's I know. Numbers don't lie. Numbers don't lie. I know.
Once I start watching, it's just unbelievable. You will go back and watch the NCAA tournament and just watch the corner threes. It's unreal.
So defensively, you should have a counter to that. I'm just thinking the other side of the court for the people listening is you got to take away that corner three.
You got to run. Hey, forget closeouts. You got to run people off of that. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You got to change their shot.
That or they got to be in the second row of the bleachers.
That's right. The next highest is any other three.
Right.
The next highest, well, now we're getting to the lowest, is the mid-range jumper.
Which is lost. The game has lost it. Yeah.
This is going to surprise a lot of listeners, okay? But the lowest percentage shot is in the lane outside the restricted area. In the lane.
Outside that charge. For people who don't know, it's the charge semicircle. Yeah.
Outside.
Wow.
Yes. Now, the highest is inside.
Right. Because it's a layup, basically.
It's a layup. Yeah, it's right. You know, it's that third grade. We call it like a third grader.
Right.
Can make.
I always tell my boys the easiest shot in basketball is the free throw. And they look at me and they go, what do you mean? It's not easier in a layup. I go, yes, it is, because it doesn't change. Layups change because you have defenders there. You could shoot in a free throw in Wyoming is the same as a free throw in Maine. They are the exact same distance. The rim is the exact same height. Nothing's changing.
But, man – layups, is it off of 1 foot? Is it off of 2 feet? Where is my defender? What angle do I have
right.
on
it? Yeah.
Is there a help defender near me? Am I leaving the ground from the same spot? Right. I mean, there's variables there.
There's a lot of variables. Okay, so last one on read and react, then we'll get to a couple other ones I have. What cuts or actions do you think will give your team the most open looks? And my assistant sent me this one, and he said, don't take it depends. As the answer. So, John, if you're listening, that's for you. Yeah. It says, what cuts or actions do you think will give your team the most open looks in the read and react?
Now, he said actions.
Like a cut or a back screen or those kind of things, actions.
Okay, so he's not saying one action. Okay.
No.
Okay, good. I don't think I can answer that.
No, but he says the ones you think are the best for getting good looks.
All right. Okay. I think it is.
And it's probably not the initial cut to the paint, because we have not had as much luck with that.
Sure. And by the way, would you remind me? Would you ask me about just cutting to the line?
Yep.
I want to tell you something about that.
Okay. So actions that the actions you think that will get the most open looks in the read and react.
Yes. All right. The first two, and you know something, as soon as this podcast is over, I'll think of something. I'll come up with something else.
All right, you can send it to me. I'll put it in the show notes for the people that are listening. All right.
But here's what I'm trying. Here's how I'm trying to answer this. Okay. For the most teams on the most levels.
Right.
Okay? Because as soon as you start, that's why he doesn't.
And I would say most of the people listening to this are youth coaches. And our high school coaches.
Okay.
So they're from, we're dealing with kids that are 10 to 12 to 18. I mean, there's other people that listen all over the world, but I mean, I would think that's the demographic that's listening to.
All right. We're talking percentages here. Okay. Yeah. Two actions. I'm going to say two. There's two. And it's, and one of these, well, both of these have varieties in them, but it's drafting. Okay. Drafting is okay. So a team, there's, let me give you a couple of examples. Steve, you pass the ball to me and you cut. You are on my right.
Okay.
And you pass the ball to me and cut. If I catch it and immediately drive right as if I'm trying to follow you to the goal,
okay,
like two race cars drafting each other. That's okay. Where we get our draft. I'm right. Drafting you.
Yep.
The reason that that gives more good opportunities is twofold here. One, you're taking away on your cut. If you're, and this is why, Steve, I don't care if you ever score on a pass and cut. I really don't.
Does it happen a lot? Because we have not been successful with that cut. That initial.
No, that's what I want to talk about here in a second. Multiple reasons for cutting and scoring is just one of them. You can't depend on that. No.
Right.
But see, if you are cutting after passing to me and you're cutting as trying to get the ball back, legitimately trying to get the ball back, your defender's going with you and is guarding you all the way to the rim. Yes?
Yes.
Well, that's my. You just took the first natural helping defender to my right with you.
Okay. Hey, Coach, I hope you're enjoying this. Please go over and subscribe and like. Leave a review. We really appreciate that. That's a little way that you can give back to us. Another way that you can give back to us is go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Obviously, this took almost 2 hours plus just to do the interview here, and it's a way that I can sneak off and do these kind of things. It allows me to take a little family time away from my family to be able to bring this to all of you. If you go over and check it out, we'd sure appreciate that. All right, here's Rick.
Okay.
There is no help defense on my drive going right now.
I agree.
In fact, the only help would be let me draw a picture in everybody's mind. Let me back up. I'm at the top of the key.
Okay.
You're on facing the goal. You're on my right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
So when you pass, you're passing uphill to me.
Yep.
And you're cutting, and I'm driving right. Now, if no one else is in the right corner.
Right.
When I draft you, there's no help defense.
Right.
Because you've taken the only one that could
do it. Yeah. And it's got to be a cut that you want to score on.
Yeah.
Are my players listening to that? You got to want to score on that cut. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not false offense. You might be open if you cut really hard.
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, let's rewind that. If there was a player, a teammate in the right corner, and you passed to me, cut, and then I drove right. I'm beating the next helping defender. And even at high levels, you and I know who's supposed to rotate in there and help.
Right.
But you know they don't get there.
They don't.
Nine times out of ten. Now, let me back this up. I'm drawing a picture if you're drawing this out, right?
Yep.
Okay, so let's back up again. You've got the ball on the wing. You throw uphill to me. You cut. Now, the moment your feet start moving, Steve – doesn't the guy in the corner, isn't he supposed to start filling up your spot?
He's supposed to rise up, yep.
He's supposed to start. So he's starting to fill up as I'm starting to drive, yes?
Right, yes.
Now, we know from the redirect that if I drive right, he's supposed to move one spot to his right. So he's got to stop and go back to the corner, yes?
Right, yes.
All right, so I got a question for you. If his defender does rotate in there and stop me on my draft drive right behind you, I've got a natural pitch to the corner.
For a three.
Yeah. His defender's going to be wrong either way. If he stays, I'm getting to the rack with no help defense.
Right.
If he helps, we're throwing to the high percentage shot inside out.
Right. You just said the second best shot in basketball in that corner three. And then literally if I'm playing that position, my hands are like this.
Oh, absolutely.
Throw me the ball.
I put that in drills. I mean, that's a great combo drill.
Right.
It's a pass cut, draft drive, natural pitch drill.
Okay. So that's number one.
That's number one. Now, by the way, every time the ball is passed, there is a chance for a team, the receiver, to draft that cutter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's why I'm picking that action. Okay? There's a chance. And also, I know that every cutter could be open, but you're talking about passing to them and them catching on the move and scoring. And as you and I know, and every listener knows, those are the weakest skills all the way around in the game of basketball. Yep. But most players like trying to get downhill on a drive, get to the basketball.
Yep.
They're all practicing that.
And you're getting, and you know what? Okay. And I got a question I got to ask later, but you know what they, and they'll get the foul call. I've noticed that the driver tends to get the foul call too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You just lean in on the person.
Right.
You know, as long as
you don't. But the cutter doesn't. That's what we've noticed, that the cutter doesn't tend – they tend to hold and bump and do that to the cutters.
And they let them
that doesn't get called. And
I wish the whole officiating association could hear that.
Amen. I'm telling you, that's my biggest harp. It's like, why can you hold when he's cutting and I can't run my offense?
Right.
I mean, I can't run my offense if they're holding my guy cutting to the basket.
See, why can't the offensive player hack those arms off of him?
Right. Yes.
Why not? You
know? And that does hinder the read and react when they're not calling that.
It does. No, you're right. Freedom of movement. Well, I think your best counter to that is you've just got to get the players in the ball moving faster. Then they have less chance to step in and get into your body and tag your body. Now, there's other little counters for this, and it's that if they are trying to bump you and get an arm bar on you when you're cutting, use that as a trigger to make your decision.
Okay.
Okay. So, like you said, you pass to me and you cut, right?
Right.
And
I'm armbarring you.
Stop and post them up and I'll throw it to you. Because usually when they're up next to you like that trying to body, it's real easy to leg whip, swim move, and post them up, right?
Okay.
All right, the other one is use that as a signal to go back screen right away. Just forget the cut. Forget finishing the cut.
Right.
And go on and screen for whoever.
Screen will counter that.
Yes. Now, Iowa's women, a couple years ago, I remember watching that. They didn't run it this year, but a couple years ago, their post player would be on the weak side, all right? They would always start on the weak side. So, the point passes the wing and cuts, okay? If she cuts through unhindered, untouched, she would go on and do her thing, back screen on, all this. But if any cutter ever cut and they got bumped or they got armbarred, stood up, they took it as a signal to screen for the post and invite the post over. See, the post is on the weak side, right?
Okay, yep.
We even got to calling that an invitation screen. Okay, so you get stood up as a cutter. You get stopped. Oh, darn. Well, don't fight it. Just, hey, okay, I'm going to go invite the post player over.
Okay.
And now you got a cross screen and, okay.
Right.
In there.
Okay. So that, so you gave me one. I want another one. What was that? Was the first one? Yeah. After the draft.
And by the way, okay. And before I leave the draft.
Yep.
See, any dribble at can turn into a draft. So let's go back to our situation. I've now had the ball at the top of the key. Okay. You are on my right wing.
Yep. Steve.
I dribble at you. You cut. If I turn the corner and draft you, you've taken
your guy.
Yeah. You've taken the first helping defender away from a dribble at draft drive.
Okay.
You know, I don't have to wait for the ball to be passed to me.
Right.
I could dribble at any teammate, send them to the goal, and draft them immediately.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Now, hey, look, that takes a little more than you do have to teach a little body language, change of speed, leaning in low with your shoulder. That kind of thing. But if you've got a little bit of deception in you as a player, a little bit of craftiness,
right?
Every dribble at, it's an opportunity for two people. The person you're dribbling at might be open, and then you could turn the corner.
Corner, okay.
And draft them, okay? So draft drive. All right, the next one I would say that give you the most is pin screens.
Okay.
Because there's such a wide variety and so few teams do them.
And do them well.
And do them well. And when they're done well, there's two people that's possibly open, the screener and the person you're throwing to, right?
Right, yes.
So you get that whole, well, do you slip the screen or do you – or after you set the pin screen, the pin screener is rolling to the basket, they get to post up. Whoever catches the skip pass feeds the post.
Screening is a lost art.
Oh, big time. Well, don't let me tell you. Hey, yes. Now, hey, here, I can't
believe. There's your next video right there.
Screens. I'm going to give you $1 million. I can't believe I'm giving this away. Okay? I'm going to do it right now. Okay. All right, here you go. I want you to get some jerseys or T-shirts made that says pin me on the back of them.
Right.
On the back of them.
Okay.
And your defense has got to wear them.
Okay.
Okay. Now, if you're on offense and you can see the words pin me, you're the one that should be setting the pin screen.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Now get on a board and play with it, and you're going to see that pin screens are always set by players two or more spots away from the ball. It's never the responsibility of a player one pass away.
Right.
They're reading the ball and reacting quickly, right? But players that are two or more away, they have an angle and they can see if the defenders are helping and sagging.
Right.
And they'll see them from their back. That's why I say.
That's great. There's your Hey, I'll give you my $1 million idea. You know those game, those things we used to wear as kids that you play laser tag with and stuff, and they Okay, so spacing is horrible, and Read and React is all about spacing. So I think you should do is get some sort of thing you could put on a practice jersey. When you get too close, it flashes. So it's about spacing. It's like soccer could use it, basketball could use it. It's all about spacing, and then you could change the distance between the spacings.
I love it.
Yeah, because you want to get to the spots, you know.
Right, right.
It's like you're too close, you're too far, you know, you're never in the right spot.
Dick Helm used to say, you know, I had him help me with dynamic defense. It was his defense, and he gave it to me and said, hey, put some meat on the bones and turn this into a course. And so I did. And in talking to him, you can't talk defense without talking offense and vice versa, right?
Right.
And he said, look, it was just kind of a by the way thing. He said, look, Rick, we were talking about, you know, what's the toughest thing to defend? That's kind of the way the conversation was going.
Yep.
He said, I'm not going to name offense is. I'm just going to say great offenses have three things, three aspects: spacing, player movement, and ball movement.
Yep.
If you can get all three of those, just now.
Okay, so everybody pause right now and rewind that because that's big. Okay. Yes.
Spacing, player movement, ball movement.
Yes.
And he said, now look, an okay offense will have one of those. A good offense will have two of them. Great offenses have three, all three.
Right.
And so that's
React has that.
Yeah, that's why, Steve, you said the spots are so important. I mean, that's why we actually put physical spots down to train them. It's that important.
Right, yeah. We use, like, the gym tape kind of thing and put it, like, this is your – yes. Because I'm also think the court's too small for kids now. I think the court needs to get bigger. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you're watching the NCAA tournament.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Something's got to change.
That and the NBA, you're watching, it's like, okay, these guys should have a bigger court.
Okay, so I coach Wesley. Wesley's 6'4", plays for the Mavericks.
Yeah.
He looks tiny. He looks like and he's not tiny. He's like a linebacker when he comes into the gym, and it's like, he looks tiny, you know, because those guys are so big. All right, so I'm going to ask you a couple generic questions, and then I think I could go for another hour, but we'll do another one. I promise we'll do another one. All right. If you could go back to yourself as a younger coach, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, my goodness gracious. Okay. That's easy. I don't want to get specifics, okay, like offenses, defenses, and stuff like that. What I would do, absolutely, this is without a shadow of a doubt, is I would get a maybe more than one mentor. And when I say mentor, I mean someone that comes, maybe a retired coach. See, I think we're very guilty in the basketball community of getting enamored with youth. When there are coaches that, you know, at the point of their retirement, they've got a lifetime. They've forgotten more basketball than you know at that time. You know? And they're looking to still be involved. They just don't want the grueling schedule and that got right.
Yep.
To be able to go to a mentor there and say, look, would you be my mentor? Would you come and watch my games and take notes? Would you, if you can come to a practice and watch my practice?
Can you come scout me? I tell young coaches this all the time. It's like I have people self-scout me. I have them come watch practices. Yeah. I mean, I'm still learning, and I've been doing this for 30 years, you know.
The moment you stop learning in this game, the moment you think you know everything, and
Mono's really good at that. PGC, Mono's really good about that. You know, mentoring.
He's the best.
He's good.
He's the best. The whole PGC curriculum is the best. So, hey, if I could go back and there was a PGC around,
right,
I would become a disciple.
Oh yeah. PGC. Oh, now, I am. It's a cult. It's a good cult, Mono. I'm kidding, but it's a good one.
Absolutely a good one.
All right, if you can think of one coaching moment that you could dive into for our audience that they could learn from, is there one moment in your coaching career that we could just dive and kind of dissect?
That you could learn from.
Another coach could learn from, someone that's listening to this, that something that happened to you one of mine was one of my players got hurt. It was a big game. I learned about communication. I learned about some of the things at that point. Any moment in your coaching career?
I got it. We started this season with a point guard that got hurt. Okay. Got hurt and didn't come back. And I had to go to a two guard. This two guy, really, it's more of a three. Okay. He'd never played point, but he was the best ball handler. I knew he was the smartest.
Right.
He's got a pedigree now. And what I'm saying is his brothers were great players. His father, I think, owned the state of Georgia high school scoring record, something like that. It was
okay.
This is a great. Heck of a pedigree. And so I asked him to be the point guard. Well, we stunk for a little while. And I could tell from his body language, you know, he wasn't happy.
Right. Okay?
And then something happened. Okay. And I think there's two things you can learn here. Something happened and we began to win. We began to do some really good things. The kid's name was Paul Kenny. If Paul's listening, anybody knows Paul Kenny? That's who it was. And I would have a timeout, let's say. And I always like to try to let them out. Or I didn't want to use the whole time in a timeout, right? Get your three things and then get gone, okay? Yep. And so tell them the three things. And they would leave. They'd go far enough out on the floor that I couldn't hear. And they'd hold another huddle. And I could see Paul tugging jerseys. You know what I mean?
Right.
Talking to somebody, grabbing, not mean.
Right.
But, you know, just reaching and holding the jersey, saying something. I never knew what he was saying. I didn't know if he was repeating what I was saying, if he was making, okay. But he started holding these little miniature, us five, no more, coach is not in here, team not in here, us.
Right.
And I noticed that that started happening. When that started happening, we started winning. Good things started happening, right?
Right.
Okay. So I think I was smart enough to leave it alone. That's what I think. I really do. I'm proud of myself for shutting up.
Yep.
And also, from that point on, I started getting even shorter in my timeouts. I wanted to give Paul as much time as he could. And this idea of, I don't need to be the one saying everything, leading everything. I need to be building this. I want to duplicate what Paul's doing next year and the year after and year. Now, how do I do that? I don't have drills for that. No right. one's ever taught me that.
Right.
I got to learn how to, and this is leadership. This is communication. This is, yep. right?
Right.
Another lesson that goes with that, okay, was this. At the end of the season, I saw his dad. His dad was one of those good parents, okay?
Right.
Because ordinarily I don't talk to parents, okay? Unless it's about their academics or something. Yep.
Like Bobby Knight said, best coaching jobs in an orphanage. So,
yeah. that's why I think many coaches want to get to the colleges. They use the 500-mile recruiting rule.
Right, yes.
They recruit them away from their parents. You know?
Yeah.
But anyway. So I talked to his dad, and I said, what happened there? You know, I took him back to that time when that started. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, the kids were coming over to my house, and they were doing all the crying and complaining and, you know, and bad-mouthing and all this. And he said, and of course, they're going to blame coach, you know. Well, coach right. doesn't like me. Coach doesn't know this. Coach said, right?
Yeah.
And he said, I finally had enough. And he said, when the kids were gone, I pulled Paul aside. And I said, let's just go through every point that was being made here. And let's talk about how much the coach has control of these things. And he did. And then he said, Paul, the one's not your position, but it's time to lead. Forget position. We need a leader. We need someone who knows how to win. We need it, right?
Right.
And he's the one. He's the one that got Paul to start doing that, right? Now, I learned another valuable lesson. If you can find that jewel of a parent
right.
that can work with your team. And by the way, I mean, he met with the team. He had, because they went over to his house
right.
between school and practice. And so he would have a chance to, you know, drop a few gems in there. You
right.
know, talk. And they respected him because they knew right. what kind of.
And they knew what he's talking about. You know, I did something several years ago too. It was not this year, but the previous year. I don't go into the huddle right away. I talk to my coaches before I go to the huddle. 2 years ago, I pulled my point guard and said, you're going to be part of this group. That's how much I respect. And it was like, it was like this because wow. it was like, because he felt part of the system. And it's like, I don't, you know, I'm to the point where I ask them opinions in timeouts. I'm like, what do you want to run?
Well, in the redirect, right. I hate to keep going back.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that. All right, part two. There's some good stuff coming in this third part, so make sure that you follow along. If you're liking these, please share them with your friends. We would really we would ask that you do that. Leave a review in iTunes, Stitcher, whatever podcast app or whatever you use. We would appreciate that. And then go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better.
Sports Social Podcast Network.